Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, here we are with that same glitch that we had last week. Greetings, welcome to your community science class, which is the Community Love Power Show. I am Yah Elohim. We are live on the air. We're having a glitch with our startup audio, so I'm going to see if I can do a different audio. No, that doesn't seem to be working either. There's some kind of technical glitch going on, and I trust that we'll get past it. So anyway, moving on, this is what happens in the moment. And once we get that, oh, here we go.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. She's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away, wonder this time where she's gone. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. She's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away, wonder this time where she's gone. Wonder if she's gone to stay. Sunshine when she's gone, and this house just ain't no home. Anytime she goes away, and I know. Hey, I ought to leave the young thing alone. But ain't no sunshine when she's gone. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. Only darkness every day. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. And this house just ain't. Anytime she goes away, anytime she goes away, anytime she goes away.
Okay, we got that to play. That is, of course, the classic Bill Withers, Ain't No Sunshine, and that's how we're opening the program today. Thank you for being here. This is the Community Love Power Show or Experience, and I'm changing that name from show to experience because it's really not a show. And our focus is your community science class. What we're speaking about for tonight is what are entheogens. So we're going to pick up from what we did last week. On last week's experience, we defined the emotional literacy, and we looked at many of the factors that affect our emotional literacy, including mental illness, internalized racism, economic disenfranchisement, which leads to the need for more tools to enhance our emotional wellness. We also talked about what wellness or health actually is. Our friend Charmaine joined us and she brought us to reality because she emphasized how important it is for us to care for ourselves in order to be successful in our lives and in our goals and intentions and in our relationships. We also looked at various solutions, kind of in a topical way. We touched on a little bit of this and a little bit of that. We looked at strategies and tools and organizations that are addressing our mental and emotional and spiritual well-being. This week, we're going to take a slightly deeper look at some of these tools, strategies, and methods. We are specifically going to be exploring the entheogens. The entheogens are the spirit healing plants and fungi and other substances. Here comes the Sabi story. Because I took magic mushrooms with Dr. Sabi and Ma'a on more than one occasion, and Wee-Wai was there too. But Wee-Wai never took the mushrooms because she had to watch over us. And so later on in the program, I'll probably tell a little bit more about that. But Sabi often said that the mushroom should be part of the healing journey. And for a while, he offered that as cosmotherapy. So, you know, we'll talk about that a little bit further in. And just for much more information about the topic of the entheogens, we did an extensive series in 2013 about six to eight programs on the various entheogens in detail. And it's still available online at blogtalkradio.com, blogtalkradio.com/quantum-evolution. If you scroll through the programs that were done under that name, you will find several very detailed explanations of various entheogenic substances. So tonight, or today, whenever you listen, and thank you for listening, those who are listening now, those who have listened, and those who will listen. So we are continuing to look at a series of tools about accomplishing our emotional literacy and mental health. But before we do that, we always had a feature called the Hot Topic. It has usually nothing to do with the overall topic of the program. It's something that we get out of science or technology or the news, or it's just something to make us keep aware of what's going on around us. And so our hot topic for today is, why do those Costco avocados last so long? It's the rise of the appeal coating on our foods. So let's take a moment and learn a little bit about this appeal, invisible coating that are being placed on the food. Chesley, this clip is going to play.
In our new series, Real Food, we're exploring the way food is produced, sourced, and distributed. Today we look at how brown bananas at breakfast could be a thing of the past. A Southern California startup called Appeal Scientist says its product can extend the life of fruits and vegetables by up to 5 times. Time-lapse video shows how it works. Ben Tracy shows us the food technology is being touted as the biggest revolution since refrigeration.
On this lush hillside farm near Santa Barbara, it's not just the views that grab your attention, but the rare produce on the trees, including these aptly named caviar limes.
Once you pick it, there's a timer going off.
Caviar limes are prized by restaurants and bars because of their acidity and texture, but they only last a week to 10 days after they're picked, making shipping and distribution difficult. That's where Appeal Sciences CEO James Rogers comes in. Ruskey teamed up with him more than 2 years ago.
We use food to preserve food.
That simple.
That simple.
They start with organic material like these frozen grape skins. They then extract certain food molecules and mix them up in different combinations. The powder, called Edapeel, is mixed with water and sprayed on fresh produce.
When it dries, It leaves behind this imperceptibly thin barrier of plant material on the outside of the produce. And that thin barrier slows down the rate that water gets out of the produce, and it slows down the rate that oxygen gets in. And by doing that, we can naturally preserve the shelf life of fresh produce.
How much longer does the average piece of fruit last with your product on it?
Each kind of produce has different characteristics. We can get extensions anywhere from twice the shelf life of a piece of produce to five times the shelf life of a piece of produce.
So you're basically monitoring how this lemon is dying over time?
Exactly.
This time-lapse room is where they study the results. By day five, the untreated strawberries on top rot, but the treated ones on the bottom are still good to eat. It's FDA approved, and the thin layer it leaves behind is edible and tasteless. It would replace the wax that is often used on grocery store produce. You're going to have some people who look at this and say, this is frankenfood. I don't want something sprayed on my food because that reminds me of a pesticide. How do you get over that hurdle with those people?
The way we've really tried to do this is try to be very open with people about exactly what we're doing. So we're taking stuff that you're eating already in every bite of your produce, and we're just reapplying exactly where it is on the produce. We're putting it on the outside.
The company hopes their product will help with global hunger in places without access to refrigeration. It could also reduce food waste. Here in the U.S., 24% of produce is tossed out before it reaches the grocery store. Another 28% is thrown out at home. But food waste experts say no one technology is going to solve a problem this big.
Fundamentally, this problem is driven by our habits around food, and so we can't technology our way out of that. I think it needs to be paired with really careful shopping.
Appeal has raised $40 million from investors. Right now, they work with several growers and are in talks with large produce brands. It remains to be seen whether those using the product would pass the cost along to consumers. For farmers like Ruskie, Appeal is buying him valuable time.
We've been able to do two or three times the shelf life, and I'm super happy to see the results.
For CBS This Morning, Ben Tracy, Santa Barbara, California.
Well, I think that's a...
Okay, so what's your take on an invisible, tasteless coating applied to your fruits and vegetables that has no label? The mixing up of various plant and DNA into an homogeneous substance that's dried, turned into a powder, and sprayed on your food. What's your take on that? I'd love to hear from you. 516-387-1233. Or you can go to the show page, blogtalkradio.com/URSustainable Communities. That's the letter U, the letter R, Sustainable Communities, all in one word. So that's our hot topic. Now, let's get your opinion. Okay, so what we're going to be talking about for this program is entheogens. What are entheogens? What does that word mean? Well, the T-H-E-O in this T-H-E-O in the middle is the same root as the word theology. So the entheogens are plants that are supported to support our consciousness, shift in consciousness, and allow us to tap into other realms. So let's hear about plants of the gods.
Australasia, Arabia, Siberia, the Orient, South and North America have perfected a natural science of spirit communication using a wide range of hallucinogenic plants which grow in deserts, forests, and even in mountains. According to Mexican shamans, the so-called hallucinogenic experience is really just the opening of a gateway to the world of unseen spirit. Shamans all over the planet connected themselves with the spirits of their ancestors, the spirits of plants, the spirit of planet Earth itself, and the spirit of the universe. Shamans achieved this by using herbs, roots, cacti, vines, saps, and fungi. To the uninitiated, the effect of the so-called plants of the gods seems unreal, fantastic, or even frightening, and is often described as hallucinogenic or psychedelic. Many people say they are scared of ever experiencing the effects of these ancient plants. American author Carlos Castaneda says that this is because our modern lifestyles have become controlled by the corporate Illuminati and are now disconnected with the spirits of nature and the spirit of planet Earth. Shamans across the planet teach their children that ancient herbs such as ayahuasca reconnect your astral body with the infinite spirit of planet Earth. Many of the plants used by shamans to open the gateway to the spirit world contain a substance called dimethyltryptamine, or DMT for short. Dimethyltryptamine has been described as the spirit molecule because it appears in hallucinogenic plants and also naturally occurs in the human brain. The effects of DMT often create a so-called out-of-body experience, where the spirit body, or astral body, can leave the physical body and explore the universe.
Maite wawitata. Vuse chance to kito ka api.
We're going to fade that down and fade it out, because that is the explanation of what those entheogens are. And then they went into a specific one, which is ayahuasca, and the active ingredient, which is DMT, dimethyltryptamine. And so this is a substance, dimethyltryptamine, that is ubiquitous in nature. What that means is that it exists in the body, your body, the brain, in plants, in fungi. It exists throughout nature in things that are created by the Creator. So what does that mean? What is the purpose of that particular substance? So what they've done in the West, of course, is isolate it into a powder. If you go to our show page, there's all kind of images on there today. I think the slideshow is probably at least 20 or 25 pages, pictures. But you'll see various crystals, and those crystalline substances are the distilled DMT, how it is often used in the West, but in other parts of the world, it is used in plant form, in combination with other plant substances, in the context of a culture. A little later on, we're going to talk about the importance of keeping these healing events within context. What is DMT, though?
This is the story of DMT, or dimethyltryptamine, a simple compound found throughout nature which has profound effects on human consciousness.
DMT, even though it's the most powerful psychedelic drug known to man, it's in every single ecosystem all over the world. It exists in plants and grasses, and it's everywhere. I mean, it's really the craziest drug to be illegal everywhere because everyone's got it in their system. It's like everyone's holding. That was like Terrence McKenna's line. Yeah, and it's a pretty intense stuff, man. If you do it, you will talk to intelligent beings from other dimensions, for real. I mean, it sounds crazy. You would think that if there's something like that, that it would be on the front page. It's amazing that people don't know about it. I mean, it's the most incredible experience. I mean, we are such an experience-obsessed society. I mean, everybody wants to go whitewater rafting, and people want to talk about, you know, my uncle climbed Mount Everest. It's all about experiences. We all want to ride roller coasters and see the craziest movies. There is a little powder, and you smoke this little powder, and it will change the way you look at everything. You won't care about UFOs. If a UFO landed right out there, I'd be like, wow, yeah, they're probably from another planet. Whatever. It's not DMT. DMT is 100,000 times crazier than that. It's like mushrooms times a million plus aliens. That's what it's like. And literally, I mean, it sounds, it's crazier than you could possibly imagine or describe. If you take DMT, you will communicate with something. And it's so beyond description that me talking about it is like trying to explain a kaleidoscope to a blind man. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. Like, there's no way you could explain it. I mean, it's just, it's so beyond anything you can explain. But something communicates with you when you do this stuff. And my words do it no justice. The craziest thing about DMT, because DMT is literally like having a meeting with God. It's like having a meeting with divine, unbelievably wise, incredibly loving energy. Like, whatever it is, the source of everything. And it leaves you so humbled that after it's over, you have it's like literally like you're still you. You still look like you. You still wear the same clothes you are. But you're not really you anymore. I mean, you literally have been changed. You know, you have experienced something that very few humans experience. And the thought to me that people can go through their entire lives and not know about this is an incredible waste of time. It's like your life could be so much more positive and so much more interesting and fascinating, and you would be so much more humble and aware of what you really are and where you really stand if you just had this experience. The crazy thing is you can get alcohol everywhere. You can go to Duane Reade and buy a jug of wine and
sure.
Get effed up.
You know?
I mean, we have drugs that are available. I mean, how many times you talk to a girl, oh, I don't do drugs. Meanwhile, she's hammered, smoking a cigarette. You know, I mean, everybody, there's drugs, caffeine. I mean, I'm drinking a coffee right now. It's sanctioned. It's a sanctioned drug because it's great for capitalism. It keeps you going, keeps you working.
Yeah.
But there's drugs out there that are actually good for you. There's drugs out there that are actually good for your mind. I do drugs because I find the state that psychedelic drugs put you in very fascinating and very introspective, and you can learn a lot about yourself. You can learn about a lot about life because it removes you and your ego from the equation. You get to look at things from like a newborn's perspective. That's why I do it. I don't do anything like, I don't do coke or meth or anything dangerous, anything that's addictive. I have never done coke. I've never done speed. I've never done heroin. I don't do do anything that can hurt you. But psychedelic drugs, those are they're very different. With this big blanket that we put on everything, we call everything drugs. That's a broad term that encompasses everything from like NyQuil to DMT. You know, I mean, they're all drugs. I mean, they all affect your consciousness. It's like, how do they affect your consciousness though? I'm not interested in anything that messes me up. I'm not interested in anything that gives me brain damage or anything that makes me, you know, addicted to it. I'm only interested in things that can alter my state of consciousness for the better. It's very, very intense. But it's not dangerous. It's a human neurotransmitter. It's actually one of the most transient drugs ever exhibited in the body because your body brings it down to baseline really quickly. Your body brings it down to baseline in like 10 to 15 minutes. It's really crazy.
What's that mean, down to baseline?
It means like, say, if you have it, you're high, you go to that dimension, it blows out, and then 15 minutes later, you're back normal. And the crazy thing is, it's just like dreams. You know, you wake up and you're like, I had the craziest dream. It was me and my buddy Mike, and we were kids, but we had a sled, and my mom was there. And then 5 minutes later, you're like, what the hell was my dream?
Yeah.
That's exactly what a DMT trip is like. It's like gold dust flipping through your fingers.
And so that's his explanation of his experience with that substance. But essentially, it is true that the ego gets diminished and we get to look at ourselves from a perspective of putting ourselves in perspective vis-a-vis juxtaposed to the rest of creation. So it is a very humbling experience, and that's how the emotional literacy, taking us forward to our original topic, gets increased, because the ego gets diminished and we're able to be more authentic. And with that authenticity, that allows us to be real in our lives and in our interactions. So about 6 years ago, as I said at the beginning, I did a series on the entheogens. There was one or two one-hour programs for each entheogen. It expanded 6 to 7 programs. What I want to do now is look at the explanation that we came up with then for DMT. Is going to be me speaking, and then when we come back, we can start to look at some other substances.
The wave pattern of probability. This is a thought wave which we have studied. When we know something is available to us, we move through the energy field with the intention that allows this manifestation into matter. Since we know that consciousness proceeds from the wave nature of our quantum brain, for this program we are exploring DMT and how this molecule that is ubiquitous in nature is inherent in our thought and manifestation experience. Okay, now we're going into hardcore science. So if you're really interested, get out your notebook and write these things down. This program will be archived upon its completion. It will be available on our site, which is blogtalkradio.com/quantum-evolution. This is your community science class, and we're about to take a trip into science. And a trip. What is DMT? Dimethyltryptamine, DMT, also known as N-dimethyltryptamine, is a naturally occurring tryptamine. What's a tryptamine? We're going to tell you. That's a tryptophan with an amine attached, but we're getting there. And potent, it is also a potent psychedelic found not only in many plants, but also in trace amounts in the human body where its natural function is undetermined. Dr. Rick Strassman's work, which we will begin to explore further into the program, is uncovering the uses and purpose of DMT in the brain, specifically the pineal gland. Structurally, DMT is analogous to the neurotransmitter serotonin and other psychedelic tryptamines. It is created in small amounts by the human body during normal metabolism, and in many cultures, indigenous and modern, DMT is ingested as a psychedelic in extracted or synthesized form. Pure DMT at room temperature is clear or white to yellowish red crystalline solid. It was first chemically synthesized in 1931. You can go to our show page and see examples of DMT crystal at blogtalkradio.com/quantum-evolution. Now, as we said, this is a naturally occurring psychedelic compound of the tryptamine family. It is ubiquitous in plants and also in trace amounts in mammals, including humans, where it may function as a trace amine neurotransmitter. It was originally derived from the essential amino acid tryptophan produced by the enzyme IMMT during normal metabolism. The natural significance of its widespread presence remains undetermined. They don't know why this thing is everywhere. It's in plants. We can say some plants right here in the U.S. that it exists in. In some cultures, it is ingested as a psychedelic drug. And when inhaled or consumed, depending on the dose, its subjective efforts can range from short-lived, milder psychedelic states to a powerful, immersive experiences, including a total loss of connection with what we call conventional reality. It is the primary psychoactive in ayahuasca, an Amazonian Amerindian brew. Ooh, Amerindian. Indigenous people of the Amazon brew, employed for divinatory and healing purposes. Pharmacologically, ayahuasca combines DMT with an MAOI, which allows it to be orally active, allows the DMT in the ayahuasca to be orally active. Otherwise, it metabolizes so quickly that if you just drink it without the MAOI, it metabolizes so quickly that it has no effect on the perception. It is, DMT occurs naturally in many species of plants, often in conjunction with some of its relatives, which are other forms of DMT. DMT-containing plants are commonly used in South and North American shamanic practices. It is usually one of the main active constituents of the drink ayahuasca, but sometimes ayahuasca is brewed with other plants. And we're going to devote a whole program to ayahuasca, mushrooms, salvia, and so forth, and just explore these topics. Psilocin, which is active in the psychedelic mushroom, is very similar to DMT. They're commonly found in North and South America. Australia has their own form of DMT plants, Africa does, as well as in Europe. In Holland, DMT weekends are very popular. They bring the shaman from South America. They have, of course, an increasing popularity in the West. So you'll probably hear more and more about that. Now, the scientific records of the West indicate that these psychotropic effects of DMT were first studied in the West and in the 50s by Stephen Zara, a Hungarian chemist and psychologist. He later worked with NIH, National Institute of Health in the U.S., when they cut him off from LSD, he switched to working on DMT. DMT can produce powerful experience, including intense visual euphoria and hallucinization. It is generally not active we've already said that. So it is a powerful, powerful hallucinogen. That's what it is. If you look at our show page or you look at our email, you saw some of the visions and experiences that people have taken this substance and had. Where do you find this DMT? Where do you find it? Well, as we said, it's ubiquitous in nature. This means that it's found in human blood, urine, brain tissue, plants, and other mammals. It has also been synthesized in the laboratory, as we said, since the 50s. In its lab form, isolated from all other bioactive ingredients, which is what happens when scientists dissect something, when it's taken out of its natural context and synthesized or isolated from the plants in which it occurs, it is a white to yellow to red crystal. You can see our show page for images of DMT, blogtalkradio.com/quantum-evolution. But what does it do? What does DMT do? DMT is an extremely powerful gateway to other realms of consciousness. As Terence McKenna and others describe, The ayahuasca experience is invariably an extraordinary one. It has positively influenced the lives of many people and has cured various forms of depression and addiction. Ayahuasca has shown people the immense beauty of themselves and shows how beautiful we all are and the cosmos through overwhelming, enchanting, and deeply emotional visions. The indigenous people that use these substances believe that the experience is naturally guided by the energies of the plants. For the drinker, this means that the effects vary with the person. It's not a medication with a precise dose. Many users report no vision, just sickness and or body cleansing, and that was what was needed. This doesn't mean that it wasn't effective. It just means that that's what that person needed, and they needed that before or more than any other experience. It's not unusual for the healing effects of these type of experiences to become apparent later. Those who seek healing of mild or severe ailments, this is the disclaimer, are themselves responsible for finding the treatment that most seems appropriate to them. In some cases, there might be a high risk when you take these journeys. Combining these substances with medicine is extremely dangerous. These experiences are not for everyone. What I have observed, if you have major unresolved mental, psychological, or emotional issues, you will have healing, but if they are major, they can bring it to the surface in a very unsettling way. So you want to be very clear and do preparation if we were to even consider using these substances. And I'm not advocating the use. I'm giving you a huge caveat. So how are these substances used? They're injected, smoked, or drunk in a booth. Western science tends to want to isolate what they perceive as the active substances from the source from which they arose in nature. So it's really extremely important to access these substances in the way that nature provides them, not isolated or distilled into a potent pharmacological drug. A great analogy is cocaine. The coca leaf has been used for millennia by the indigenous people of the Andes. It has been taken to increase stamina, appetite, and as a mild stimulant. When taken out of context and placed into crystalline form, it becomes a potent drug that causes physical and mental imbalances. Cocaine, for those who didn't pick up on that. And then there's the crack sugar. Also taken out of context in its natural environment and isolated, we have yet another potent drug that causes physical and mental imbalances, feeds cancer, causes depression, and much more. If you are taking any type of antidepressant, you do not want to take DMT ayahuasca. You do not. Combining these is dangerous. You don't want to do that, okay? If you decide that you want to take some kind of journey of this nature, then it takes months of preparation. It's not a recreational thing, and it's not about sitting around the fireplace with your friends like you're having a cup of wine or something. So this is very sacred, and it is in the context of a culture. In the south and in the eastern parts of the globe, DMT is usually consumed as part of a shamanic journey, guided by an experienced journeyer and in the context of a culture. In the west and north, it is often used almost recreationally and sometimes taken out of context. There are, though, an increasing number of people in the west and the north who are opting for the authentic shamanic journey, and the shaman are being called from South America and beyond to travel around the world to facilitate these experiences. One of the people who is really well known in the West about in terms of journeying, the shamanic journey. And
we can fade that out because it's actually going to end. Well, it just actually ended. But that was the explanation that was put together in 2013 when we were covering this topic. And I feel like it really covered everything, as far as giving a good explanation of what it is, what the benefits are, where it comes from, what you do with it, how it works in the brain, and so forth. So I'm so glad that we have that to access. And as we said, there are extensive programs and research that have been done on this topic under the website blogtalkradio.com/quantum-evolution. So, listening to all that we've heard thus far, the different explanation of these substances, we still have to actually pose the question, who and how would these substances benefit us today? Is it still relevant for us to look at this as more than just a trend? Because the substance that we're talking about, which is the DMT, and currently, which is the DMT and the ayahuasca, kind of came up as a fad in through the New Age movement and a lot of the people that are describing the experiences that we've shared thus far actually tapped into the experience through that. Doesn't mean that's a bad thing. Just asking, is it still effective and functional for us as we look at solutions for our mental illness, our mental well-being, and our emotional literacy? So what's the take on using the substance to help with depression or mental illness? Let's explore that for a moment.
Ayahuasca is hard to spell. Ayahuasca. Maybe I should grab some. That would be easier. Hey everybody, Trace here for DNews. In 2015, the United States got its first legal ayahuasca church. It promised to provide ayahuasca spiritual healings to members at a price. It was quickly shut down a year later, with skeptics calling the church a cult and a scam. But there may be an actual benefit to using ayahuasca in the first place. Ayahuasca is commonly used by indigenous communities in healing ceremonies in the Amazon rainforest. It's a tea that produces hallucinatory effects after consumed, but many consider it a miracle drug, treating a number of disorders, including depression. But is this scientifically accurate, or are we just drinking up some kind of ancient placebo Kool-Aid? Ayahuasca is traditionally made from the leaves of a shrub and the stems of a vine. When digested together, they introduce a fairly famous compound called DMT into the blood, which eventually finds its way to the brain and causes hallucinations. But DMT has a not-so-famous partner, harmine, which, in addition to hallucinations, has antidepressant qualities. And there have been studies to back up ayahuasca as a treatment for depression. Most recently, one study published in PeerJ exposed human neuroprogenitors, cells that are capable of becoming neurons, to harmine, resulting in a 71.5% increase in human neural cells. This is similar to other antidepressants, which cause what's called neurogenesis. But this isn't the first study of its kind. There have been several studies done on ayahuasca, usually with small sample sizes, like really small. But because there aren't that many in the overall scientific literature, we thought they were worth mentioning. One study with 6 volunteers found improvements within hours in people's moods after drinking ayahuasca. Typical antidepressants could take weeks. Another study had 3 women with depression drink ayahuasca. Their symptoms decreased for 2 weeks afterward. And in a 2015 PLOS ONE study, they linked the ayahuasca's altered state of consciousness to decreased activity in parts of the brain associated with depression. There's even a meta-analysis of various studies on ayahuasca and its antidepressive effects from the past 25 years. They concluded that ayahuasca is a useful pharmacological tool for the treatment of mood disorders. It's actually pretty difficult to conduct studies on this substance, considering DMT is classified as a Schedule I drug by the U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency, banning it from medicinal use. Many of the studies we mentioned here happened in countries where it's allowed for religious purposes, including Brazil and Peru. In which case, researchers would have to wait for the perfect series of events, volunteers who experience depression and who are willing to drink ayahuasca. As for larger controlled studies outside of religious exception, we may just have to wait a bit longer. As always, more research is needed. What other psychedelic drugs do scientists think might have medicinal benefits? Find out in this video here with my girl, Kristen Conger. What other science questions do you have about stuff like this? Let us know down in the comments. Make sure you subscribe for more DNews, and thanks for tuning in.
So he gave his little basically big up about the effectiveness of the substance for mental illness and depression. And most of these substances that contain DMT, and the other entheogens that we will be exploring this evening actually do seem to have, anecdotally and in small studies, as he said, a very positive effect on mental illness and depression. And then as we move those experiences, we can be more authentic, as I said earlier, which then allows us to have greater emotional literacy. And the process of looking into this, because we asked the question, well, are there any African-Americans who are supporters of this? And so we found plant teachers, people, a group, Tony Moss, who is an advocate of entheogenic substances for healing and helping the African-American community. So we wanted to share his perspective, and his organization is called Plant Teachers.
You've worked with people who, mm-hmm. from these communities, who have taken ayahuasca and had their lives transformed. Mm-hmm. Can you explain some of those ways?
Well, I've just used my own as an example, and relating this to the African-American community. I did an ayahuasca monologue. They're actually called the ayahuasca monologues, and they're on YouTube. And in mine, I shared this experience I had. I was invited to do a ceremony. It was all men, and I was very intrigued by that. And during this ceremony, I'm condensing the story dramatically. At some point, I'm in ceremony, and I become aware that there's a man standing next to me, which is no big deal. You know, but at some point, I kind of like, you know, I'm singing the songs, you know, and the ayahuasca thing is very beautiful, and having this experience of like, oh, my brotherhood, I'm here with all the guys, you know. And then I start realizing, like, wait, everybody that is participating in this ceremony is accounted for. Like, who's this person standing next to me? And I look over, and lo and behold, it's my father who had died 5 years earlier.
Wow.
Right? Yeah, and as vividly standing next to me as I'm, you know, you sitting in front of me. And talk about, you know, I'm tripping, that's what I'm thinking, you know. But so this vision, I'll call it, of my father says to me, oh, I'm glad I have your attention. Let's go take a walk. So, you know, of course, in the ceremony, you're not allowed to leave. So I asked permission from the leader. I said, hey, my father's here. Where else are you going to say to somebody, my dad's here, he passed away? And they go, oh, cool.
Only in an ayahuasca ceremony
exactly,
would they understand
right?
that. It is a common
it is
theme
very common.
That people are visited by
exactly,
loved ones
yeah.
who've passed away.
Yeah, and so long story short, he says, yes, as long as you stay within visual range, we need to see you. So I go journeying with my father. And in that experience, basically, through this conversation, what happens in the condensed version is that my father, his father, and my mother's father all appear to me. And they basically say, we brought you here because we want to apologize for the abuse that you suffered growing up. And my family, you know, it's a very interesting and dicey topic to always get into with the African-American culture, is the form of discipline, which is like spanking or beating or whipping, whatever they call it, is really commonplace. And so much so that growing up, that was normal, and I assumed like, well, this is the way kids are raised, you know. And as I kind of grew up and started meeting other kids in school, I was actually shocked to find out that I was meeting like really good friends who were awesome, who told me like, what, you're kidding, my father's never hit me. I'm like, no. Like, how did you turn out okay? You know? So I'm like reflecting on that, thinking, God, it's really strange, you know. So in this experience, suddenly, as they're saying this, I am transported back. It was like that near-death experience that people talk about at the end of life, where I'm suddenly replaying my life, and I'm watching all of these experiences of me being, you know, doing simple things like dropping a glass and breaking it, and then my father or grandfather's response would be to come with a belt, you know, and beep, 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 beep. And it just seemed like, well, that's what you do, you know. So as I'm watching all of that, I'm realizing what an effect that had on me and how that actually wasn't okay for a little very sensitive, you know, 5 or 6 year old. And that vision turned into me seeing them being beaten by their fathers and their fathers and their fathers. All the way back, this vision goes to me watching slaves in Africa running through grasses being chased by either their own people or Europeans coming to, you know, bring slaves to America. And then it clicked. I'm like, oh, my gosh. And all these, like, you know, ancestors, my father and their fathers, in that moment, they're saying, yes, like, this is something we inherited it. We don't know any other way, you know. And we apologize because we realize, you know, the reason it was passed down to you is because it was passed down to us. And this trauma within our community goes all the way back to slavery. There's no way around it, you know. And in that moment, it was such a huge release of, pent up both anger, frustration, you know, all the pain and suffering that was caused from that. And as you mentioned, you know, earlier, there is this sense of liberation. And it may seem simple, but in reality, what happened in that moment was I realized I feel like I'm standing in my own skin and my own body and consciousness for the first time in my life. I was like liberated, right?
Yeah.
So much so that it felt like, you know, I don't even know who this person is without that story, you know, running in the background. So it was a tremendous help to me, and other things happened related to that that are in this monologue. But that was the basis of it. So what I started seeing was like, wow, the African American community particularly is so anti-drug, and appropriately so because of how it's destroyed the community. But they're literally talking about drugs that were, as we know, kind of introduced into that community by, now there's research, you know, that proves it was by the CIA at some point. So they have this really interesting relationship with drugs because so many African American men are in prison from drug-related causes, either selling it or using it. So there's this whole stigma now that I feel like something like ayahuasca, which could be incredibly beneficial for my community, has such a stigma on it, you know, that they wouldn't even go near it, you know. But I feel like, you know, I'll be the poster child, and a lot of other amazing African-American people I know that now use ayahuasca are reporting the same thing, like, wow, this could so liberate and benefit our community and our culture.
Because I feel, too, out of any culture in the U.S., I mean, just with the history of slavery and just constant oppression, there has to be so much trauma built into the DNA.
Yeah, there has to be. And from the inside out, you know, actually being raised in that community and being an African American, you know, it's difficult to bring up these subjects. I believe her name is Dr. Joyce O'Leary. She started touring around doing this lecture series that was basically called post-traumatic slave syndrome that was really rejected early on, not only by established, the psychiatric community, because to call it a syndrome, it has to be approved as one, but also within the African-American community, because what she was basically saying was the reason we are the way we are is because we're all descendants of slaves. And we are the result of a culture that was extremely traumatized, you know, and she goes on in the lecture to explain all the reasons why. And I was gripped by that because I knew what she was saying was basically true. Maybe not all the details of it, but the overall essence of it was true because I lived it in my own experience, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so for me, because I know that is true, and I know that as a culture, as most, you know, cultures or people of color in the United States, to some degree, you are the descendants of a group of people that were traumatized. You know, and not that Europeans weren't. That's why they came here, right? They're also escaping their own trauma and oppression. But my life took off because of that experience that I did in the all-male ayahuasca ceremony. I really felt like, wow, I am now liberated to kind of like move on this planet in an authentic way and accomplish what I want to do, have the kind of authentic relationships with people that I want to have, and a depth of love that I know is possible that was all being shrouded and controlled by this trauma that was always hiding in the background.
He said it very well. I think he was very articulate with his comments. And that's the view. If we can move past these traumas, if we can look at it, put it into perspective, and see where it comes from, get a relationship with it to look at the source, just like a physical ailment. If you can get to the source of where that ailment arises, then we have the ability to heal. And that's the topic, healing, emotional literacy, being authentic, so that we can have authentic relationships with each other, so that we can build, so that we're not constantly starting over with every generation or even every few years, that we have the longevity. This is what this means. It isn't just looking at tripping and all various substances. We're looking at various tools that we can use that have been given to us to use wisely, in moderation, in a respectful way, in the context of culture, in the context of ceremony for our healing. That's what we're talking about. So what's your take on it? Give us a call, 516-387-1233. You can go to our show page, blogtalkradio.com/URSustainableCommunities. That's the letter U, the letter R, Sustainable Communities, all one word. Let's take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and look at some other entheogens, psilocybin amongst them.
It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard to live it, but I'm afraid to die. And I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. I go to the movie and I go downtown. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. Then I go to my brother. Brother, help me please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. Lord, there have been times that I thought I couldn't last for long. But I know a change gon' come. Oh, yes it will.
Another classic, Sam Cooke, and we know a change is gonna come. We are the change. So we said that we would talk about psilocybin for a little while, and that's what's next. So what is psilocybin? This is going to be me talking a little bit. I've been playing a lot of clips and recordings, but I'm going to talk a little bit now. Psilocybin is what they're calling a psychedelic. So we use the word entheogen, which is a term that is the plant that it allows you, or the living substance that allows you to look within. In the West, they call it hallucinogen or psychedelic, which kind of gives a connotation that it's not real, that, you know, a hallucination is something that isn't real. Psychedelic is something that causes hallucinations. So there it's really obviating and negating the substance or negating the experience into the realm of something less important. So psilocybin is a naturally occurring substance, and it is contained in more than 200 species of mushrooms, and they're known as psilocybin mushrooms. And so what happens when you take psilocybin into the body, it becomes psilocin, which is chemically very similar to LSD and mescaline. and DMT. They're all tryptamines. So the effects are similar. You get euphoria and visual and mental changes. You see and hear things that you didn't see and hear before. Your perception changes. Your sense of time changes. You have experiences like what Tom Moss just described. And depending on the level of fear, because I'm not trying to paint it as all Pollyanna, there can be nausea and panic attacks if they're, especially as I said on the earlier clip, if they're deep unresolved issues and they're not being dealt with. It's really important that when we're in the healing journey that we have a toolkit. We have various tools, substances, methods, and practices that we're using, not just one thing. So that includes our faith, our relationship with the Creator, and how we live that. That's a very important part, very important what our physical diet is in terms of what we're taking into the body as nutrition, very important what the environment is and who we surround ourselves with. It's very important to move the body, breathing. It's so many different factors, and this is just one factor. So we can't think that we can take a substance, you know, have that pill, you know, have that pill, take a pill concept, that we can just take a substance without doing any kind of other work. And another very important part is when we're using these substances, if we choose to do so, with the putting it into the context of culture and preparation and healing, it's really advisable to do some work ahead of time. That includes detoxification, because a lot of that nausea and panic and all that is the toxic state of us. So if we take time and space and energy to clean, detoxify, heal, and raise our frequency as part of preparing, that could go months ahead of time. And then, in a reverent way, in context, surrounded by supportive, loving beings, we have this experience. It's a different thing than wanting to get high or tune out or run away and take something to escape. Because we can't escape. It's within us. It's all within us. Anyway, psilocybin has been used for many thousands of years. There's paintings in different parts of the world that illustrate or seem to illustrate the use of psilocybin, and indeed fly agaric as well. The psilocybin, the intensity and the effects vary depending on the species. That makes sense. So that's a really short explanation of what it is. I'm not going to make it any longer. And is this an alternative for everyone or for anyone? Well, there have been studies that have been done that talk about the effectiveness of the substance, psilocybin. And it's very similar to what we have said about ayahuasca and what we're about to say about iboga and ibogaine, that using the right conditions, the substances can be very helpful. Using them to treat mental illness. So in certain parts of the world, studies are being done using these substances. The U.S. is kind of lagging behind that, but for example, in Australia, there are several studies going on using psilocybin or magic mushroom, and they have been very positive effects, because it's, of course, often stated that antidepressants in the pill form, the medications, are not really that effective. No more effective than placebo for many people. So we want to tap into real change. As they said in previous clips, the brain chemistry is altered for the better with the substances that nourish the brain and actually foster the growth of additional neurons and neural pathways. That's why after we have these experiences, we're more creative, more relaxed, more calm, and more focused, because we've grown more brain cells. So there is a lot of social stigma in certain countries around these substances. As Tony said earlier about the stigma in the African American community about the use of drugs. But frankly, as someone else said earlier, look at all the drugs that are rampant in all the communities. So it's a little bit of a sense of, I guess the word would be, of hypocrisy, or I was going to come up with a different word, to embrace some drugs and eschew other drugs because of stigma or social context. These things are not, to me, drugs. I don't really like that term. They're entheogenic plants and substances. They're gifts that are being given to us as part of the pharmacopoeia, along with all the other gifts that are given to us by nature, by the Almighty Creator, Creator, Creatress. So, is it a viable alternative for everyone? Nothing is a viable alternative for everyone. Again, we are looking at various tools, various approaches that we can find out about in order to design our own wellness package, our own wellness toolkit. This is something you may not know about, or you may have heard of it, but it's not ever come up in your life to do any extensive research about it. The thing about the people in your life, if you have any, that have mental illness, and I would dare say who doesn't have someone in their life that has mental, is working with mental well-being. All of us are working with mental well-being. So if there are nutritional nourishers that we can take that foster the unfoldment of ourselves, if we're willing to look at ourselves honestly, we can develop into even greater beings, which is the whole point. Okay, so we are in the last 20 to 30 minutes of the program. I scheduled it for 2 hours, but I'm not intending to go 2 hours. I just really didn't want it to cut off before I was done. But we wanted to take a few minutes and look at, because we asked on the flyer, no, I'm not finishing sentences, but we asked on the flyer, are there activists or advocates in the African American community that support the use of entheogens? So we just shared with you Tony Moss, who fits that category, African American, who supports the use and speaks positively about use of ayahuasca and his positive experience. There's an elder gentleman who exists within our community, Iyi Kaliji, or Kaliji Iyi, and he is, I would say, I was introduced to him not personally, but just his work online by a sister that had been studying and researching what he had been doing. So I looked into what he's doing, and it's really, really, really excellent. He is a very committed person to working with the psilocybin and high doses. He does mega doses. He's also a martial artist and specializes in African fighting systems and African martial arts. I wanted to take a few minutes, about 10 minutes really, to listen to him, because his wisdom in the topic is, to me, the amongst the most profound that I've heard. I've spelled his name so many different ways, but we're going to just do a few minutes of that, because he's talking about the fact of the African entheogens. He talks about the fact that everything that exists, because the continent, the landmass was one landmass, all plants exist all over the planet. It's just to be able to recognize them, because sometimes because of climate, they might take a little bit of a different look. But in each continent on the planet, these substances exist and have been provided to us for our nourishment and for our well-being. We're going to take a few minutes of listening to his wisdom. Kalindi Ee, and I'm sure I didn't say that right.
Steve Englehart and Frank Brunner, in 1974, were in an apartment, sitting around, dropping acid, eating mushrooms, trying to make their deadline for the reemergence of a Marvel comic book character. He was on the C team. He wasn't Captain America or Iron Man or Thor or anything like that. His name was Dr. Strange, Dr. Stephen Strange. And they reimagined Dr. Strange into the Marvel Universe by starting the whole thing over again. And those 74, 75, 76 comics were all entheogenic. And we're coming up just next year with the Marvel's rendition into cinema, Doctor Strange. And what I look at when I look at the entheogenic community is that ayahuasca may be medicine, MDMA or Iboga or Hawaiian baby rosewood, whatever, but mushrooms have always been special to me. I don't see them as medicine. They can be used as medicine because you use anything for medicine. You can use water. Water is medicine, but you don't call water medicine. You say, well, let me get a glass of medicine. Psilocybin is a tool in its first and foremost principle as a tool of exploration. And I think what we need in this community is more Dr. Strangers. We need more sorcerers. We need more magicians. You know, this is the land of Hogwarts. You know, you should be grabbing them mushrooms in October and, you know, going off to school. Because the way I've envisioned this is that, as Moodoo talked about earlier, you know, I'm scared to talk after you. You were on point there. The vision that I've been looking at is that we need more people not to take psilocybin for early childhood trauma, for sexual trauma, for some type of psychological problem, but as a tool of exploration, to explore the multiverse, to go deep, to go hard, to go full blast into the novel states of consciousness that we look at. People, you know, a few years back when I had to talk about high-dose psilocybin in the 20 to 30 gram range, people looked at me like I was extreme, you know. But I'm not the only person that does that. You see some other folks here today taking 20 grams of psilocybin, dry grams. Now it's becoming, how do I get so much down? That's the difficulty. So dealing with azurensis and the panscience and others to get a higher dose of the constituents inside of the body, to be able to explore, to be able to look into the darkness and say, hey, I'm not looking for the light in the darkness. I'm looking for my eyes to adjust to the darkness so I can go deeper into the darkness. I know and understand that this is not just a feel-good, friendly, bubbles and fairies type of thing. It's also hard work. It's deep work. It's the places that you don't want to face inside of yourself and inside of the multiverse. So we need more Dr. Strangers. We need those folks who are going to go out and encounter the entities that are in these places and spaces, because they are there. And they're not all likable and lovable and, you know, the swirling divas of Hindu pantheons. There is the Mahabharata there also, where there's war, where there's malevolence, where there's horror, where there's fear, and all of those things are there. And we've still pushed forward and moved forward because it's something that we have to do to become something more. And I think that's what entheogens do for us. It is something to make us more than what we are as being human beings. I think it ushered us into the human and will eventually usher us into the transhumanistic realms and then ultimately into something that is unimaginable. Ray Kurzweil and them, when they're talking about the technological portion of this, they're talking about the technological singularity. They're talking about merging with AI, downloading consciousness into supercomputers. But we already had the supercomputer. We already had the hardware. We already had the software in the entheogens that nature provided us from the beginning. When we were walking on the Sahara, you know, came from outer space. But outer space is nothing out there. It's all inside. When we look at Alpha Centauri and Vega and Orion and Sirius, they're not out there. They're inside. So when we look out, we're only looking at a reflection of what's inside of us. So these things came through the multiverse to be able to pair with us, for us to be able to merge with them, and they deliver their information to us. Because the models that we built in the world are only models that we are taking from ourselves. So software, downloading, uploading, you know, improving hardware, putting in the new chip, erasing the whole hard drive, all those things are part of what happens inside of us. And it's in our community, it's in the literature, it's in the lectures. We just have to start embracing it. The Sahara, at a place called the Sili Plateau of Niger in Algeria, is where we have the oldest representation of mushroom use on Earth. Now, I know people, you know, talk about South America and things like that, but even if we talk about Pangaea, at one point in time, South America and Africa were butted together. They melded together. So the same plants that you have in South America, you have the same plants in Africa. They just never went to Africa and asked the Africans. They went to South America and asked the South Americans, but then went to Africa and asked the Africans. Because Africa is the dark continent, you know, Tarzan's there with Jane and the rest of them. And the thing about Africa is that Africa, when they say something secret, it's still secret. Not secret if you got $1,800. It's still secret. Because those oaths are taken. Those type of things are adhered to, you know. And when I was talking about Marvel Comics, because Marvel Comics is driven through entheogens and LSD and mushrooms and things like that. All the same two guys that were hooking up Dr. Strange by sitting in an apartment in New York dropping acid and mushrooms are the same ones who created Guardians of the Galaxy and the Infinity Stone and the whole new Marvel universe that's going to be put out in the movies, and it's coming out in the movies in Avengers 3 and Dr. Strange and the Black Panther. All of those movies are a reflection of the entheogenic usage of those 60s guys who came back from Vietnam and were utilizing entheogens, and they moved past the old guard of Marvel, which were Steve Ditko and Stan Lee and those older guys who had brought it up to a certain level. The Black Panther's coming out in 2016 also. It's going to talk about Wakanda and the high-level civilization of Africa that is not a fantasy. They didn't just make these things up. Jack Kirby, who was really the brains behind Marvel Comics, not Stan Lee. Stan Lee was the executive. Jack Kirby, who created the Black Panther in 1966, during the black uprisings in the United States and here in the UK and other places around the world, brought the first black superhero to Marvel Comics. And he talked about Wakanda, which was a mythical place, but Wakanda is not a mythical place and is not a mythical people. And the Black Panther is not a mythical comic book character. You have the Black Panther Society in Africa, which eats the Amanita pantherina mushroom to get the powers of the Black Panther. They use the Black Panther mushroom for the powers of the Black Panther. But they use the same mushroom in Japan, and that mushroom delivered what was called ninjutsu, or the dark Japanese martial arts. Ninjutsu came out of a mushroom, a psychedelic mushroom. As a matter of fact, for those that don't know, I'm a martial artist. That's what I do as my work. I teach martial arts, ancient and traditional and contemporary African fighting sciences. And all of the martial arts that you see have entheogens that go along with them. How you think, you know, the kung fu guys, you know, they're standing on a blade of grass or jumping to the top of the tree and, you know, a thousand arrows come and they just knocking them out of the way. That's all entheogenic use. Because they would have battles where they never engaged physically. They took the entheogen, stood back, and they battled entheogenically between the two warriors. So nobody was killed, but you found out who had the best skill and the most skill. These type of things went on. They were common. You know, we had masquerade warfare. Where you see the masquerades in Africa, you may see a bunch of raffia or somebody on stilts and things like that. They did battle the same way. This was all part of the sensibility of the entheogenic use in ancient times, in the ancient world, that is reemerging now. We're only at the beginning. People always say that the 60s was a failure. Oh, the hippies are gone and the 60s was a failure. They got rid of it. No, that was just the beginning. It's a baby now, just learning to walk. This conference is just standing up on your feet, waddling and toddling. But when the next.
So we're not going to actually play the entire piece, but we wanted to go about 10 minutes in. I think he really gave a very beautiful explanation of entheogens, how we can use entheogens as a tool of exploration in addition to healing trauma. So that is Kalindi E, and we're coming to the last few minutes of the program. I'm actually not going to be able to get to the Iboga, Ibogaine until next program, but we'll just pick up there with the Iboga and the Ibogaine. I just want to I have a really short clip because I was supposed to tell, I think as we're closing, I was going to tell my Dr. Sabi story on the mushrooms. So about 30 years ago, when I was staying with Ma'a in Puerto Rico, and as I had said earlier, as I said at the live event, that, you know, Sabi would come and go. So at one point, he came there to Puerto Rico, and we took the psilocybin. And he was driving. I had never done that before, was not really familiar with it, but I trusted Sabi and Ma'a, and so I took these mushrooms. Sabi got behind the wheel, Ma'a was in the front, and Wee-Wai and I were in the back. Wee-Wai was only like in her teens, like 14, 13, and she was the one that was watching over all of us. Baby was driving the car, and I just got, everything was just funny, you know, everything was funny, and then it started to make sense as I went further into the experience. I do remember that he was driving, Sabi, and he drove almost off the pier. I mean, the tires ended right at the end of the pier, and so, you know, there was no fear. Everybody thought that was funny. But the point is that the cosmotherapy is what Sabi called it. And he wanted that to be part of the whole nutritional package because he felt that we couldn't actually heal until we got to know ourselves and move past all the things that brought about the disease in the first place. So as my almost closing, I have like a minute where he's speaking. This is probably about the 90s, about the mushroom.
And Swaziland is a country that grows something that would change your thinking in 4 hours. Where you used to be 400 years ago, you will go back in a matter of 4 hours. It's not a miracle, but it acts like a miracle. Your brother's right. It is an herb that when you take it, it takes you back to your childhood. And you begin to see yourself and your activity and all those things that you experience in life. But sometimes we get to the age of 40 and we say things like this. You know, I had some bad experiences. You had what? You had bad experience? Well, how come you're alive? Everything that you experienced was supposed to be experienced by you. Mm-hmm. If you were not supposed to experience what you experienced, how come you experience it? How come it happened? Oh boy, over here.
What about the other product that you were talking about that takes you back to your childhood?
That product is the Soparia cubensis. that is a product that the people in Africa ate. And this is why the people in Swaziland was never conquered, because they could see what the British was going to do before they even did it.
All right. You
going to
start selling that?
Sir, I have it now. But you will have to stand for that.
What's it called?
Shofaria Kubensis. S-P-R-O-P-H-A-R-I-A. Shofaria Kubensis. C-U-B-E-N-S-I-S.
Watch your hands move. It's your own eyes that have seen. So won't you judge your actions to make sure the results are clean? It's your own conscience.
Pass it on. Pass it on. Pass it on. But as the day grows old, I know the sun is gonna find you.
So come back in your doing, pass it on.
Shall reign, pass it on.